7:40 first pitch. Tough one for the White Sox last night. In fact, both of the last two games, extra innings losses for the White Sox. 3-2 to the Padres last night. A double by Fernando Tatis Jr. off Justin Anderson sent the Padres to their 88th win of the season. And then on Wednesday against the Angels, they played 13 innings, went back and forth and back and forth. Did not score in the 12th, neither team. And then in the 13th, the White Sox failed to score their zombie runner, and the Angels plated theirs. It was a 4-3 Angels win. So it's a bit of a tough sled for the White Sox here over the last couple of games. Though you have seen, I think, better play. Still, they are 36-18 on the season and heading toward a record. Obviously, they'd like to avoid, if at all possible, to take a whole lot of wins to get away from it now. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We got a whole lot planned for you in this evening's show leading up to the pregame show at 7 o'clock. White Sox have a lineup out for this game against the Padres. Roster moves have been made. We'll tell you what we got coming up on the show. We're just going to pause it real quickly here. 10 seconds for station identification as we get it started right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
So before we get to the news today, and before we get to talking about the state of the White Sox record at 36-18, close now to a piece of history you'd rather not be close to, I wanted to look back a little bit into last night's ball game, because even though the White Sox fell to the Padres 3-2 in 10 innings, the White Sox had, and it's funny, you know, I talked about this on last week's White Sox Weekly. Garrett Crochet's starts have been coming up on Fridays more often than not, which means the first, I don't know, segment or two here on White Sox Weekly has kind of been devoted to Garrett Crochet's starts. And why not? It's, if he's not the best story of the White Sox season, then I'd love to know what is. Give me a ring and let me know. Because for me, this Garrett Crochet thing, even with the ups and downs and the bumps and bruises and the, I don't know, kind of, despite the fact that it's a monumental achievement what he's been able to do, given where he came from, this second half of the season has kind of felt a little bit less than satisfying, I guess, knowing that, you know, every time he's going into a start, it could be the last one of the year. The White Sox have been more than open, and Crochet has too, been more than open about they want to get him through to the end of the season, but understand that at any point, you know, something could pop up, a velocity drop, a shoulder fatigue, an elbow thing, God forbid, right? But that's the reality of being a pitcher in today's baseball. And the White Sox and Crochet and everybody has kind of been operating with the idea that each next start could be the last one for Garrett Crochet. And I'm taking a look at White Sox beat reporters, whether it's Dale Van Scowen or Scott Merkin or Lamont Pope, everybody who's out there in San Diego right now, and trying to see if Grady Sizemore, interim manager of the White Sox, has spoken yet to White Sox beat reporters. Doesn't look like that's happened yet. Probably in the next half hour, 40 minutes or so. I'd love to know whether the White Sox have made a call on this being the final start of the year for Garrett Crochet. It is entirely possible. Going into the start last night, Grady told White Sox beat reporters, one more after last night would probably be the end for Crochet, that they wanted to get him through the rotation one more time. But Crochet ticked off a big-time milestone in last night's start. He got himself to 200 strikeouts. In fact, in his four innings of work, he struck out 8 last night. The stuff was phenomenal. The velocity was right where you wanted to see it. He got jerks and profar on the 99-mile-an-hour fastball in the fourth inning, his last inning of work, before setting down Manny Machado. 3 straight strikeouts to finish off that fourth inning. It was pretty incredible. Here's a smattering of strikeouts, a bit of a highlight reel as we've got the Garrett Crochet strikeout montage from last night as we think about the success that he's had this season and where he places all time in White Sox single season accomplishments in terms of strikeouts. Here's a whole bunch of them.
3-2, cutter, called strike 3 on the outside edge.
You say what?
Pitch, swing and a miss on a high fastball, strike 3. Swing and a miss, strike 3. Third punch out for Garrett. 2-2, swing and a miss, strike 3. A pitch, swing and a miss. That's strikeout number 200, and Corey Lee will lob that ball over to the bat boy, who gives it to the authenticator. Rochet delivers, and a swing and a miss on a changeup. That was a beauty. He had Tatis off balance. Six strikeouts for Garrett. Swing and a miss on a sinker. He got him. Swung on and missed on a cutter. Good call. Eight strikeouts for Garrett. Second time he's fanned the side.
Nice job for Garrett Crochet last night. Four innings, one hit, no earned runs, no walks, and eight strikeouts. He came out there looking like a guy who was a man on a mission, you know, a business trip to San Diego, really. And that's been Crochet pretty much all season long. There have been, you know, like I said earlier, bumps and bruises in the road and some, you know, some struggles with mechanics and therefore command at points during this season. And it certainly looked different in this second half. But that doesn't mean that I think anybody in and around baseball has changed their opinion of what Garrett Crochet can be in a starting rotation, given what he's accomplished so far this year. You heard the highlights from Len and DJ. And I'm pretty sure that when DJ said, say what, he was looking for Len to say runs house. But I don't know whether we cut that part of it or maybe just Len missed the runs house thing. But anyway, with the single season strikeout records, Garrett Crochet has gotten himself into the conversation. The White Sox have had now 11 different pitchers reach the 200 strikeout plateau. Chris Sale, Ed Walsh, Lucas Giolito, Dylan Cease, Gary Peters, Javier Vazquez, Wilbur Wood, Tom Bradley, Esteban Loaiza, and now Garrett Crochet with 203 strikeouts. There have been, all told, 24 different seasons in which White Sox pitchers have gotten over 200 strikeouts in the franchise's history. Ed Walsh did it four times. Chris Sale, I believe, has five seasons of over 200 strikeouts in the White Sox franchise history, and now Garrett Crochet. And I think, you know, we asked this to Len and to DJ at one point. I think it might have been the last start for Crochet, or maybe two turns that would go through the rotation. He was approaching 150 innings, was Crochet, and getting close to 200 strikeouts. And we asked White Sox fans and Len and DJ what would be the most impressive thing for Crochet to have accomplished this year. Would it be getting darn near 150 innings? He's at 142 right now. He's not going to get to 150, even if he does make that next start. You and I both know that he's not going eight innings in his final start of the year. Very few would, if you're not, even if you are heading to the playoffs. You would have to be a team that needs every win to get in. A little bit like the Tigers are making a run like right now. Anyway, Crochet made 31 starts this year. He may have a 32nd. He went over 200 strikeouts at 203. The strikeout percentage by rate, Crochet's not a qualified pitcher with 142 innings of work, but by strikeout rate by pitchers with 140 innings of work, Crochet has the highest strikeout percentage in all of baseball, even higher than Chris Sale, who's going to win the Cy Young for the National League, for the Atlanta Braves. It's Crochet. That's the number. And I think I've talked about this some, I think probably on last week's White Sox Weekly and a little bit in the postgame show last night because it was just so top of mind. I think when the national media and or other baseball broadcasts or even, you know, you go out to the bar and you're kind of talking about what this has been for Crochet and for the White Sox this year, certainly it's been difficult to find silver linings. Crochet is absolutely one of them. And it's kind of easy to make this a bit of a grayer thing for Crochet just by saying, well, since the All-Star break, Crochet has an ERA that looks more like, I don't know, 5.5 than it did 3.08 in the first half of the season. And while that's true, you're going to tell me that Garrett Crochet, you know, if he'd been allowed to or been healthy enough or had the stamina, however you'd like to put it, you're going to tell me Garrett Crochet couldn't go out there throw one more shutout inning against the Padres last night? You look back through any of his, you know, decent starts here since the second half began, I think if there's one more inning that he's allowed to pitch in just about every circumstance, and certainly there was that game against the Texas Rangers that got rained out after two pitches, four, something like that, from Garrett Crochet, then you're looking at lowering that earned run average. It really, really hurts him that he's only gone four innings max since the second half of the season. And really, that includes the start prior to the All-Star break against the Miami Marlins, where, credit to them, they got to him a little bit. They paper cut him some. Not in terms of the earned runs. He only gave up two in that final start of the first half against the Marlins. But, you know, the pitch count really got up on him quickly. 93 pitches in four innings. And he was really struggling to put hitters away in that particular ballgame. Still, you know, I think overall this season is a wild success for Crochet for the White Sox. And maybe even for putting a blueprint together about how to create, probably the wrong word, but how to assemble a pitcher that has the desire that Crochet did coming into the season to prove everybody wrong. The natural ability, the talent, the stuff, the work ethic, right, of getting the arsenal to where it got. And the White Sox have, I hope, kind of learned what it takes to assemble that pitcher out of parts that maybe don't look like a starting pitcher a little bit. Make no mistake that as the White Sox, you know, continue on in this rebuild from 2024 into 25, into 26, and however long it takes to start putting a competitive team out there on the field, one that's going to actually compete for an American League Central Division title, and the hope is to do that quickly here, one way or the other, it's going to take from here on out more stories like Garrett Crochet, perhaps not to this degree of success. How do you get there? But it's going to take more signings of Eric Fetties. It's going to take more development stories of Garrett Crochet. And whether those pitchers are going to be, and I'm only talking about the pitching side for a specific reason. I'll get to that in a moment here. But when you're talking about those kind of development pieces, it's whether they play for your team or whether you can develop them and move them for other pieces that you don't have within the organization. And that's something that White Sox general manager Chris Getz has talked fairly openly about over the last couple of months, definitely since the All-Star break, and Crochet, you know, made that team as the White Sox representative. I think probably Eric Fetty should have gone as well, but that's neither here nor there. The reason I think about it from a pitching standpoint, from the White Sox perspective, is a couple of different things. One, DJ and I, Darren Jackson and I, had the privilege of having Brian Bannister on the show during the game broadcast back in San Francisco about a month ago. And while we were talking with Bannister, the White Sox senior director of pitching, we kind of talked about how it is easier for baseball development folk and evaluators and scouts and everything to be on the forefront of the pitching apparatus than it is on the hitting side of things. The pitcher sets the pace. It's the offense, right? It's, if you, now that we're in bear season, we can talk about this way too. It's time of possession, right? It's holding on to the ball. It's making sure that you set the agenda. This fastball is going to be here, and that slider is going to go there, and I'm going to throw it this hard. And I'm going to. The pitching is the aggressor in baseball, and it's easier to be the aggressor and develop pitches and be on the forefront of adding velocity and all this other stuff that does make pitching inherently dangerous and has absolutely changed the tenor of baseball, but it matters more than anything else. You look at the Dodgers right now, a team that has been on the bleeding edge of pitching development, and right now they are suffering the consequences of being on that bleeding edge. I don't think they care much. I think they knew that those consequences would be there, and that's in so much to say, I was listening to a podcast I absolutely love by one of my favorite baseball writers, Ben Lindbergh, the Effectively Wild podcast by Fangraphs. And Meg Rowley does a fantastic job on that podcast as well. She's the EIC for Fangraphs too, but she happened to be on vacation for this pod. So I heard Ben say it, and he mentioned that this drove me insane. The hardest throwing pitching staff in all of baseball last year was the Dodgers double A team. It blew my mind. And to think about that from a development standpoint and kind of porting that over to where the White Sox either want to be or could be, you can just get those players to being either usable at a major league level or usable by other teams at a major league level faster than you can a catching prospect who needs a whole lot of time to develop both the hitting and the catching and the defense and everything else that goes along with it. Or, you know, getting a high school player like George Wolkow to understand that his body's going to work this way, that he's got to grow into things as well, you know, whether that be swing or size or athleticism or what have you. And also, by the way, learn how to hit sliders that get increasingly difficult as he works up the minor league system. All of those things are slower than developing pitching. And I think it really looks to me like the White Sox want to be on the forefront of developing pitching. And Garrett Crochet has been at the forefront of that conversation from a national side, from a all things considered kind of side when it comes to MLB. Crochet is going to be something that a lot of teams look at and go, okay, do we have a Garrett Crochet in our situation? Do we have a Garrett Crochet in our system? Do we have a reliever that might be able to get us to where he's gotten, or at least push that development envelope to a standpoint where we weren't to a point we weren't comfortable with before because we've seen the White Sox do it? I find that a really interesting thing that we're going to watch throughout the course of the offseason. We'll leave you with this before we hit our first break of the night. Garrett Crochet got to 200 strikeouts last night. Len and DJ had a great call on it and provided some perspective to it as well. Here is Garrett Crochet's 200th strikeout on the season.
A pitch, swing, and a miss. That's strikeout number 200, and Corey Lee will lob that ball over to the bat boy, who gives it to the authenticator. 5 tonight, 200 on the year.
There it is, number 200 for Garrett Crochet. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get to the lineups and some roster moves for the White Sox. There is something happening in the lineup for just the fifth time in the last 12 games that I'd hoped we'd see more of, and may, as we get to the final couple games of this season. I hope that's the case. We'll tell you what it is when we come back. You've got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
In Chicago app.
Significant. Ramos cranks one high and deep left center, and it is gone. Just snuck it over the wall. Brian Ramos with his second Major League home run.
Brian Ramos with the home run, Len Casper on the call, and White Sox fans, you can customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack and get access to the opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. That's whitesox.com/flexpack. Told you a couple of things I wanted to get to about tonight's game, and something that I hope we're going to see a lot more in the last, what is it now, 8 games, including tonight, of the season. 9 days, 8 games left for the White Sox in this year. Miguel Vargas is at third tonight. Brian Ramos is the designated hitter tonight. I talked about this when Brian Ramos came back on September 8th, it was. There have been 5 games in which Ramos and Vargas have been in the lineup together in the 12 days, including this one. I'd hoped for more, to be quite honest with you. I understand that it's a difficult balance and kind of a testy dance that Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos need to do, you know, to kind of get in the lineup together. They play the same positions, the best. Third base is either of their or both of their best spots. It looks to me, and especially with a couple of plays that Brian Ramos made at third last night, that glove-wise, Ramos is a little bit better over at third base than Vargas is. But I've been impressed with how Vargas has been able to kind of settle in over there and be a bit more steady. Throwing from both of them seems to be, you know, kind of that next step, right? I don't know that either one of them has, you know, your classic third baseman arm. If they do, maybe getting that footwork, you know, locked down a little bit more with some more work over there at third is what unleashes that arm a little bit or shows us that velocity a little bit more. Ramos certainly made a play coming in on a baseball and whipping it over to first last night that impressed at least me. I'll give you the lineup here, and it's a bit of a different look, too, for the White Sox against the Padres tonight. I would imagine, and we'll hear from Len Casper and Grady Sizemore during the pregame show in about an hour and a half or so, but I would imagine that Miguel Vargas leading off and playing third base is a bit of the old, hey, let's see if we can jumpstart him here and just get a good run toward the end of the season, something better than it's been going for Miguel Vargas in the last 8 games. Miguel Vargas leading off and playing third base. Luis Robert Jr. hitting second and in center field tonight. Andrew Vaughn over at first base. Lenin Sosa at second base. Brian Ramos, the designated hitter. And Dominic Fletcher is the 6th hitter in right field. 7, 8, and 9 are Jake Amaya at short. Zach Deloach in left field. And Chucky Robinson will catch. We've got a day game tomorrow for the White Sox and Padres, a 3:07 start, you know, so 1:07 local time, I guess, in San Diego. you would think that Corey Lee's back at it. Then off day on Monday for the White Sox before coming back home to face the Angels Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the final three home games of the season, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It's wild. And then three on the road against Detroit. And the Tigers are, man, they're in it. That whole playoff, I am stunned with how the Tigers have been able to get themselves back into and really on the cusp of a wild card spot. They're a game behind the Twins right now for the wild card standings. 81 and 73 of the Minnesota Twins. The Tigers are 80 and 74. The Mariners, who have not been playing super great baseball here over the last few weeks, they're still in it, two games out. They've got to hop over the Tigers, of course. They're 79 and 75 for that AL wildcard spot. And, you know, in the National League, we've got a fairly similar race in that there are four teams pushing for those final three spots. The Padres can still, they're in play to take down the Dodgers in the NL West right now. They need these wins against the White Sox to do it. They'll go play the Dodgers on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this coming week, and it'll be in LA. Diamondbacks in that second spot, and the Mets have been able to leapfrog the Atlanta Braves given all of the injuries Atlanta has had. They're two games back of the Mets right now in that wild card race. And yeah, I guess I planned on bringing this up a little bit later on in the show, but here we are talking playoff races. That Braves thing, man, can you imagine what the Atlanta Braves may have looked like had Ronald Acuña Jr. and Spencer Strider and all the other, if it looked like we thought it would look, you know, just with like relative health. I'll even give you, you know, the struggles that Austin Riley's had over at third base, not defensively, but, you know, offensively. Still, you look at that team and go, man, Chris Sale is going to win his Cy Young, and thank goodness for that. I know White Sox fans, it's having watched Chris Sale for as long as we got to watch him in his youth and, you know, kind of making a similar, you know, a similar ascent to what Garrett Crochet has this year, kind of, you know, standing up for himself and saying, I'm going to be a starter, thank you very much, and then going out there and starting. Chris Sale just mowed down batters and strikeouts after strikeouts and finished top six in Cy Young voting, I believe, for six straight years, and then top three in four straight seasons. I'm kind of doing this from memory only because I can't type and talk at the same time, and I didn't think to pull up Chris Sale's baseball reference page, because why would I do that? But to see Chris Sale this close to getting that hardware but not making the playoffs, it'll be a little, I suppose, bittersweet for him. But, you know, he's got his World Series already, and I think all of the plaudits he needs. I don't know that Sale is going to make the Hall of Fame. But certainly by winning a Cy Young this season and a few more years of productive baseball, I think the case gets more and more interesting. He lost seasons to injuries, whether it was the foot, the shoulder, you know, the whole deal, the wrist. I think a lot of White Sox fans hope for nothing but the best for Chris Sale because of everything he was able to do here on and off the field and the passion that he pitched with. Hey, speaking of Sox fans, thank you to Sox fans. And join us for Fan Appreciation Series during the last homestand, September 24th through the 26th. All series long, you enjoy surprise giveaways, $10 select lower-level tickets, $10 parking, and select $5 concessions menus. Plus, check out our end-of-the-year retail sale for amazing deals. For more information, visit whitesox.com/thank you. That's whitesox.com/thank you. Anyway, getting back to the lineup tonight, you know, I understand that it's a difficult thing to get Vargas and Ramos into the lineup at the same time. But something that Grady Sizemore talked about really candidly with White Sox beat reporters over the last 2 days and has been written up some on MLB.com by Scott Merkin and in the Sun-Times by Dale Van Scowen and in the Trib by Lamont Pope, because it's a big story, is what's going on with Yoan Moncada? How is Grady handling Moncada in the lineup right now? Obviously, you know that he came back into the lineup for the first time since April 9th on Monday. Well, I shouldn't say in the lineup, but back onto the roster. He hasn't been in the lineup yet. And in that game against the Angels, the one that went 13 innings, he came in to pinch run and ended up being the last batter the White Sox had up there, struck out with the bases loaded in the 13th. Moncada shared some fairly candid thoughts with White Sox beat reporters. And we will talk with Scott Merkin of MLB.com, who wrote up the quotes and his feelings and all that kind of stuff about, you know, where he's at and what he's doing and where he's – it's certainly not a comfortable fit right now for Yoan Moncada. He was very clear about that, and I would imagine that it's a little bit less than comfortable from a couple of different perspectives. However, that's the gig right now for Yoan Moncada. I think when Grady talked, I believe it was yesterday, and said, listen, you know, guys like Vargas and Ramos, we know we're going to be on this team going forward, and therefore we've got to see him a little bit more. Therefore, Yoan Moncada is going to have to, you know, either wait his turn to get a couple of cuts or may not get him at all. That's the harsh reality of life right now. And that's where the White Sox are in terms of a development run. Yoan Moncada, as you likely know, has a team option for $25 million next year. There's a $5 million buyout. And given the way that Grady Sizemore has talked about it and just kind of, you know, putting the pieces together, it's entirely likely that this will be the last season for Yoan Moncada with the White Sox. Now, that said, getting Vargas and Ramos into a lineup together is just as difficult with or without Yoan Moncada if you just kind of regard him as the bench player, because I think the White Sox are really only comfortable right now, given the fact that we're at the end of the year and both players are going to have a whole offseason to kind of, you know, whether it's reacquaint themselves with old positions or learn new ones or whatever, both guys are going to have to figure out something other than third base or in addition to third base in order to make themselves the most appealing option to the White Sox come opening day 2025, right? That's just the nature of the beast. Still, Ramos at DH and Vargas at third base tonight. I hope there's more of it here coming down the line. I understand that one of them's not going to go over to second or left or whatever. I don't think that's going to work, at least not super comfortably for either player right now. And that leaves a guy like Andrew Vaughn or Gavin Sheets or, you know, whoever else you're kind of rotating through that DH spot, whether it's Benintendi or, you know, we've seen some other players in that spot here over the last few days, but not many, that they might have to take a seat. And if that's been true for Yoan Moncada, then it may well be true for some of those other players too. And I guess we'll have to see just how much push that philosophy has when it comes to Grady Sizemore's lineups over the last eight games of the year. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. When we come back, roster moves for the White Sox this afternoon. We'll kind of talk about the state of things, the pitching state of things a little bit. We'll get into some of the national pieces that have been written about the White Sox and their season. Some back and forth between Garrett Crochet and Jonathan Cannon in a prominent national column earlier this week. And if you missed it, I think it's important to hear. We'll do that when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Tonight, join us for $5 Tuesdays, now available for the final three home games of the season, September 24th through September 26th against the Angels. I had to read that twice while I was talking. $5 Tuesdays, now this Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. That's a $5 homestand, I guess. September 24th through the 26th against the Angels. All fans will receive and enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu on select food and beverage items. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesday. Should be some good fall weather out there, too. So pack up your favorite sweaters, break out the flannel, and come to a ball game here before the end of the season. A couple of roster moves I want to get to. The White Sox have shuffled the bullpen around just a little bit with Michael Soroka getting healthy. We'll talk about that in just a moment. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on the show. This is yours as much as it is anybody else's. So we head out to the phone lines now in Bloomington. It is Mark on White Sox Weekly. Mark, what's on your mind, man?
Thanks so much for calling. It's Wilmington, sir. It's Wilmington. I don't want to be a troublemaker. But I think it's time to save the White Sox. And why couldn't we be aggressive like a team like we did in 2005 and go get players? And that's, you know, like go to Cuba, go to Japan, and you get the best players. And there's this guy that the A's have called Miller. We'll get him as a closer, and now let's start piecing this team together, the White Sox together. This is a great team, franchise to save, and they're worth it. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right, Mark, appreciate you, my man. Yeah, I mean, listen, they're going to be in talent acquisition mode, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be through free agency all that much. White Sox general manager Chris Getz was on the television broadcast with John and Steve, and you know, talk pretty openly about the fact they don't, I believe the quote was, we don't expect to be heavy players in free agency. That leaves you player acquisition by other means. And it's funny, just because the White Sox, you know, don't figure to be, like Chris said, heavy players in free agency, that doesn't mean that they're not going to look to add talent from other places. As to Mason Miller, I mean, listen, we saw him pitch a little bit against the White Sox this season. I think a lot of people have watched him pitch all year. He was a really interesting conversation as we got closer and closer to the deadline from, you know, a contender's standpoint. The A's, for a lot of different reasons, some of them made sense and some of them didn't, wanted a king's ransom for Mason Miller. He's a pitcher who could not stay healthy as a starter, has gone to the bullpen and found outrageous amounts of success when he's able to pitch. He is a pitcher, right? So you're dealing with injury risk there, especially when you're on the higher end of the velocity distribution like Mason Miller is. The harder you throw, the more likely you are to get hurt. We do know that now. It kind of sucks when you're watching guys light it up at 99 and thinking, boy, I wonder how long that elbow is going to hold together. But that's the nature of the beast right now. That is baseball in 2024 and, quite frankly, has been for about 15 years now. I don't think the White Sox want to be in the business of trading any of their prospects or any of their top-tier players, because Garrett Crochet is absolutely going to be in trade conversations this winter. I would imagine the same is going to be true for Luis Robert Jr. It's been talked about for months now, so why not talk about this the right way? It is entirely possible that those guys are moved. I do not think any one of them will be moved for a top-end bullpen piece in the ninth inning that a team, you know, who's rebuilding is only going to get to use 20, 25 times a year in save situations, 30, 35 times in save situations. I don't know that that's a great allocation of assets when it comes to trying to win 85, 88, 90 ball games in a season. I think where I'd like to look for the White Sox to add is on the hitting side, right? You've got to find the offense. If you look up and down this team right now, this is a really tough offense when it comes to putting runs together, when it comes to putting, you know, big innings together. They don't walk a lot. They don't hit for a lot of power. They hit for a decent enough average, not great, but a decent enough average, or at the very least, their batting average on balls in play is high enough so that you could reasonably think there's something to work with here if you can get walks and power into the lineup one way or the other. I was actually, gosh, this will be the second time, but Ben Lindbergh was talking about the White Sox a little bit. Here we go. Please don't tell him I quoted him twice in one show, but I guess he knows it already. By base runs, which is another way of putting together an offense, it's kind of the grand total of total bases plus some other opportunities that go into it. It's kind of an advanced math thing that's difficult to do over the radio because I don't have a producer smarter than me, and not that Brendan Riley and Sean Graney aren't much smarter than me, but smarter than me to put up the numbers on a screen for you. That's all this is. Those two gentlemen are much smarter than I am, but we don't have a screen here on the radio to kind of show you how it works. But trust me when I tell you that base runs is kind of a big way of looking at how much offense you should have and how many wins you ought to have. By base runs, the White Sox probably should have 10 more wins than they do right now. They should be 46-108 or something close to that by way of the total base runs that they've accumulated this year. There's been some bad luck in it. There's been some bad mistakes in it. There's been some defensive issues in it. There's been some pitching blowups in it, right? I mean, it takes a lot to lose 118 games the way the White Sox have so far this season. However, I think the focus, getting back to Mark's, you know, kind of question here or kind of thrust, has got to be on the offensive side of things. It's got to be patient hitters. It's got to be guys that can access power. Got to be guys that can, while striking out, still do some damage. And all of those things kind of pair together and function together. And here's hoping that they've already got some in the system in guys like Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos and Colton Montgomery and Edgar Caro, and down the line we go through some of the White Sox top prospects. I think there will be a lot added, or at least a couple added to that White Sox prospect list by the time we're talking, you know, let's see, February, something like that, when we're on the cusp of spring training starting and pitchers and catchers reporting, maybe Valentine's Day. We've got some really heartfelt news about top prospects in the White Sox system getting added. That'd be the timeline, and I think those are the expectations that are fair to put on this White Sox ball club at this point here 8 games away from the end of the season. Appreciate the phone call, Mark. 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to hop in here on White Sox Weekly. I mentioned to start the segment that the White Sox have made a couple of roster moves coming into tonight's game. Why not get to those real quickly here, and then we'll kind of talk about what it might mean for the Sox on the other side of a quick break. We've got Scott Merkin of MLB.com kind enough to join us at 6 o'clock and talk about the Yoan Moncada situation. Yoan talked with White Sox beat reporters, and Scott Merkin wrote it up really well on MLB.com. Anyway, Michael Soroka is back, returned from rehab assignment. Jordan Leisure is also back from rehab assignment and has been optioned to AAA Charlotte. Sounds like Leisure is going to stay at AAA Charlotte for the remainder of the year. Don't expect to see him up at the big league level. We'll talk about Leisure on the other side too. Chad Kuhl has been designated for assignment. Soroka in 6 injury rehab games with Charlotte's 3-0 with a 3.38 earned run average, 8 innings of work, 3 earned runs, 1.79 average against, 2 walks, 12 strikeouts. He's been on the IL since the 19th of July with a right shoulder strain, which actually happened back on July 14th. Leisure made 5 injury rehab appearances with the Knights. He's been on the IL since the 8th, with July 8th, pardon, with right shoulder impingement. Had a really good first little bit here for the White Sox, and I think they might have revved the gas pedal a little too hard, and Leisure, for his part, may have raised his hand a little bit too often. Not to blame either one. It's just kind of a fact of what was and what was needed out of the bullpen at that time in the early parts of the struggle for the White Sox. Kuhl has had some really good stuff. He's certainly an impressive story. Took a whole year off, you know, to be with his family as his wife was battling breast cancer. He's really an incredible dude, and we saw the stuff, right? It's just a control of the strike zone, and given the fact that the White Sox kind of had to redline the bullpen here over the last few days, you don't want to get into a situation where you're putting someone in a spot to get hurt in the latter parts of the year, like we saw with Davis Martin at the end of 2022 taking the ball and ended up going for Tommy John surgery. Who knows? That may have happened one way or the other. But, you know, the extra innings game against the Angels where the Sox had Jared Schuster open the game, Gus Varland, Prelander Baroa, Justin Anderson, Frazier Ellard, Chad Kuhl, Angel De Los Santos, and Jairo Iriarte work. Off day 2 days ago. Then last night, it's Garrett Crochet, who is in essentially an opener at this point, 4 innings. Prelander Baroa, Gus Varland, Chad Kuhl, Jairo Iriarte, Frazier Ellard, and Justin Anderson. All of them pitched in both of those games. And yes, the off day in between certainly helps reset some things. But the Sox need a few more innings, and Michael Soroka is up there to do it. We'll talk about the rest of that side, the other side of the coin here as it regards those roster moves prior to the game against the Padres tonight. More to come here on White Sox Weekly. Scott Merkin on Yoan Moncada coming up at 6 o'clock. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
ESPN Chicago Triple Play, AM, FM, HD, and app.
White Sox fans, there's still time to win one-of-a-kind experiences this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win 2025 season tickets. September's winner will receive a 20-game plan for the 2025 season, inclusive of 4 tickets to weekend games. Get the best seats and all the benefits in 2025. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Now, this is a treat. I'm really looking forward to this. Had not planned for it. Figured our friend Ron had better things to do here on a Saturday and talked to little old me. But we're talking baseball on Chicago radio, and you know Ron on the South Side is going to call in. Ron, appreciate you as always, my friend. It's been too long. How you feeling? What's on your mind?
We going to get through this together, as we always have, and always sitting this. But I'm going to jump in. God, I agree with you 100%. I am optimistic about the pitching, but we need some offense. When people talk about these teams that turned around those 100-loss seasons, Houston, you got to talk about Jose Altuve and all those position players. Look at the Braves. Ryan Cook, all of those were position players. Yes, they had some pitchers that came, but their system produced position players. Baltimore Orioles, I was so disappointed when the Sox and the Orioles couldn't make that trade for Crochet. Mm. It was the perfect trade. They needed another pitch, and it's showing up now. It probably will be more even in the playoffs. And they had position players to trade. I don't know why they were doing it. So that's pretty much it. But yeah, you're right. You can, at the end of the day, you have to score.
Yes.
We had Crochet out there yesterday, but if you don't score, so I just had to say that. I'm always listening, and you know how much I admire you and just enjoy you. And so I will continue to be listening again. We'll get through this season as we've done for all the years.
Ron, I appreciate
you, Connor.
It's like being on a comfy therapist couch when Ron calls in. Always good stuff. We've been talking baseball with Ron here in Chicago he didn't want to know how long. Appreciate you, buddy. I think he's right, and I think he's right to point out the Astros, too. And I'm glad he pointed out Jose Altuve as well because of this simple thing. The Astros had tons of prospects come up through that system, through their whole – and actually, I wrote this down for myself the other day. Jeff Luhnow, the former general manager of the Astros, who, yes, presided over the banging scheme, right, the stealing of the signs and the banging on the trash can and the telling everyone that fastballs were coming. But that said, even if you harbor all of the animosity – and you can hold on to it as long as you want. It's not mine to take away from it – against the Astros for doing what they did. It is impossible to argue that they were also a very talented baseball team whose players, whether they've moved on to other places or have continued hitting the way they did, they're all good, right? Maybe they were better. Who knows? Probably not. A lot of studies have shown that it really didn't help them all that much, but that's neither here nor there. The point about Altuve is this. I remember years ago doing other shows at other places talking about prospects a lot, you know, late night. Yeah, that's just what I was up to, talking about minor league prospects and talking baseball with everybody around town. No one had Jose Altuve as a top prospect. Nobody. He was an interesting player. He was a small guy who played great second base and could absolutely get the barrel to the baseball more often than he should have for that size, but eventually ended up blossoming into one of the best second basemen in baseball for an era, right? You know this. We've seen it. He continues to do so. Jose Altuve may well go to the Hall of Fame. He was not a top prospect in that system for years. You are going to need your development team, your scouting, your analytics, your general managers, your luck to all come together on at least one or two of those types of players to win a World Series. You look back at World Series pasts, whether it's, I don't know, Cody Ross with the Giants a couple of years ago, there are dudes, Steven Pierce, who come out of absolutely nowhere, role players, who are in the right place at the right time, assigned the right jobs by the right managers, given the right assignments against the right hitters to get guys out that help you win in October. And all of those things start with establishing a baseline offense with a stable, a depth of players. If we've learned one thing over the last 10, 15 years of baseball or so from teams that have consistently been good, it's that depth matters. Depth really matters. Whether it's the Dodgers, whether it's the Braves and learning the other side of that story, you know, how much your team can be tested when you don't have a lot of depth and a ton of stars, and those stars like Austin Riley don't play all that well, or Ronald Acuna Jr. gets hurt, or Spencer Strider has his elbow blow up, all of those things, we've seen how impactful that can be. So, you know, to my mind, you know, establishing that kind of thing, assembling that kind of thing matters in a huge way in today's baseball. And this is a game so much more about a breadth, a depth of development than I think it used to be. And maybe I'm taking shots at old-time baseball, right, at your 80s and your 70s and that kind of thing. And it's entirely possible that those who saw it and those who lived it and those who did the kind of things that I'm doing now, that we're talking about now, back then had a different perspective on it and saw this in the same way. But it feels like now, especially with the speed by which player development is changing how it operates, that is absolutely the cutting edge, the bleeding edge of how to develop a depth of a baseball team. So I think Ron's absolutely on it. I think that's what the White Sox are looking to add, and they've got to get to doing it. And I think this offseason is going to be a pretty pivotal one when it comes to how and whether if they choose to move on from some big names that we've loved watching over the last couple of years in order to acquire some of that talent. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We're going to talk with Scott Merkin at 6:15. If you've a longtime listener here to White Sox Weekly, you know that likely means the Michigan game is coming down to the final minutes, and Merk can't be bothered until the final whistle, which we don't hold against him at all. Lord knows I'd feel the same way if Wisconsin was any good any given fall. It would probably be the case. We are here with White Sox Weekly and got a lot more for you. I want to get into the state of the system, and rather the state of the team, the state of things, as the White Sox are now 36-118. One national columnist wrote up a back and forth between some White Sox players that I think is pretty informative of how, from the inside, players are kind of looking at what's happened, that you've the same thing that you've seen from the outside. We'll do that when we come back and get you all set for White Sox baseball later tonight. In fact, we'll tell you about that pitching matchup in just 10 seconds. We'll pause it here for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Tonight, it'll be Chris Flexen for the White Sox, Martin Perez for the Padres. Ball game coming up at 7:40, pregame show at 7. Scott Merkin in 15 minutes on the Yoan Moncada situation when we come back. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Got the pregame show starting in an hour. We'll start the ball game at 7:40 tonight. Or at least that's the plan. We got started late in San Diego last night, 5 minutes after the scheduled start time. Not exactly sure why. Hopefully the Padres can get us an on-time flight for tonight's game. 7:40, Chris Flexen for the White Sox, Martin Perez for the Padres, Miguel Vargas, Luis Robert Jr., and Andrew Vaughn at third, center, and first. Lenin Sosa, Brian Ramos, and Dominic Fletcher, second designated hitter and right field. And then Jake Amaya at short, Zach Deloach at left, and Chucky Robinson catching. That's the lineup for the White Sox tonight. We'll talk with Scott Merkin of MLB.com in just about 15 minutes. If you're looking forward to hearing from him earlier, then root for the Michigan Wolverines, I guess. Sox fans, bring your pup out to the ballpark on Tuesday, September 24th for Dog Day, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Grab a seat in the outfield, watch the Sox take on the Angels at 6:40. There is limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. You know, a lot of national columnists were in town kind of documenting the White Sox season. And yeah, it's certainly been a really tough year. We were just talking with Ron on the South Side about exactly that, and what needs to change in order to change what's been going on. However, there are some players, obviously, in the White Sox clubhouse, you know, on the roster, whether it be, you know, in the majors or at AAA or AA, that are going to be parts of the next White Sox winner. That much we know. That's how baseball works. Whether or not Garrett Crochet is one of those guys, I found it interesting. Jeff Passan of ESPN.com, national columnist and a damn good baseball writer, wrote up some of the quotes from the clubhouse that he got when he was in town during the last homestand. And there was a back and forth in his column that I found particularly interesting, and I thought, you know, you should probably hear in case you hadn't read it. And I don't often read straight from columns here on White Sox Weekly. I feel a little bit, just peeling behind the curtain here, I feel a little bit more comfortable doing it since these are direct quotes from players in Passan's piece. I highly encourage you to go read it. It is a good one, and he is a darn good baseball writer, fully worth your time investing in. However, here is the back and forth from Cannon and Crochet, and I'll read a little bit of the I'm not going to do voices. I'm not going to do like a Jonathan Cannon Georgia accent or a Garrett Crochet Tennessee accent. That would be both bad and confusing for you and for me. So I'll tell you when Cannon's talking. I'll tell you when Crochet is talking. Cannon said, I'll start with the sentence that Passan wrote before this back and forth. Cannon and Crochet, who are locker mates, started going back and forth about the season, about what came of it. Wasn't just an examination of the White Sox, but a treatise on the slow-burning devastation of losing. Let's be frank about this, right? Cannon said, when you're having a season like this, it feels like nothing's going your way. When we played the game the other day against the Orioles, when the White Sox won 8-1 back on September 4th, it just felt like balls are falling. Line drives are going to people when we're on the mound. It's like, wow, this is great. Crochet then says, it seems like once an inning, we give up a flare single. And then every time we hit a flare on offense, it's like, oh yeah, that one's falling. Someone dives and catches it. Then Cannon, even yesterday, the first inning, you get the first guy, then a little flare over the shortstop, and it's like, oh, not that cheap hit again. Crochet again. Then we had a guy in scoring position, and Ramos hits a ball 106, and Jose Ramirez falls down catching. It's like, bleep, man. Cannon. The peak of that was when Jankowski robbed Vaughn's walk-off homer. Crochet. Yeah. Cannon. Just the feeling in the dugout, I can't even describe what it was. I think we stared at each other for 30 minutes after, and then we come back and it's all over Instagram and everything, and it was arguably, because of the situation, maybe the best catch I've ever seen. And of course, he just got put in the game that inning. Crochet. It was an overwhelming feeling of what the bleep. That's the back and forth between Jonathan Cannon and Garrett Crochet. And I'm sorry I couldn't do the voices. I've been trying to get better at doing those kinds of things, reading books to my two-year-old. But they're a work in progress, and I don't know that Southern accents are really my strength. I think what's really clear here is that this isn't being handled in secret. And I think that's a pretty important thing. Passan's piece is, for the most part, about the strength of the White Sox clubhouse, and I can attest to it. Every clubhouse is going to go through, you know, hell at different points during a season. There are losing streaks for even teams that end up winning 100 games or so. There are losing streaks aplenty for the White Sox this year. There had been long stretches without a win, and it felt like, from testimony from White Sox players, that it'd be difficult to get another one. And finally, you break that 21-game losing streak. You break the 14 or you break the 11. And it feels, you know, better. You release some of that pressure. I do think, though, that whether it was Sean Burke or Jonathan Cannon, I forget. It was Davis Martin who had this quote in another piece. We're just guys who are doing the best we can and trying to get that next job in the bigs. You know, that was essentially Martin's thesis for how the White Sox clubhouse is kind of staying together. And that much is evident at this point. And I think there are a good number of players on this 2024 team that can be either bridges to or impact players on that next White Sox winner. It's going to take some development, though. And it's going to take some work from both the front office, the coaching staff, whatever that's going to look like come start of next season, and the players themselves in order to get there. I don't know how quickly it can turn around, but it is certainly a situation where some improvements on the margins, especially defensively, and that's, for me, that's kind of what hurts this season the most, is that the White Sox wanted to be better defensively, and it took moves at the deadline. And an increased playing time for Dominic Fletcher and a couple of different other different things in some other spots to get better defensively. They got to close to where they wanted to be, but far too late in the season. And it cost, you know, some pitchers in a lot of different spots. Guys like Eric Fetty and Garrett Crochet in the first half of the season were able to rise above and quite frankly, pitch over some of the mistakes and deficiencies that this White Sox defense had. Guys like Chris Flexen were not in a lot of different instances. And that's not to say he didn't try. I mean, geez, you look back through the winless streak that Chris Flexen suffered, that the White Sox suffered, and he's hanging in there, hanging tough, and getting to 3-2 counts after falling behind and throwing strikes when he can. And there's just too many balls in play against the defense in the White Sox at that time, you know, or the first half of the season, that wasn't making enough plays. The other thing that's, and Andrew Benintendi is not in the lineup tonight, but the other thing that I find really interesting is the bounce back from Benintendi in this second half. You've likely seen it, and I mean literally seen it on the television broadcast, if you've got that on and you're listening to Len DJ at the same time, which is a thing that you can do and we highly endorse here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network, just because, you know, we love Len and DJ. But you've seen it, the splits for Andrew Benintendi in this season. And it's not subtle, right? I mean, it's a very, very different player in this second half than we've seen in his entire career with the White Sox. Now, injuries, it seems, really affected his ability to swing and swing for power in the first half of his first year. And that's unfortunate because that's where Andrew probably could have been the most effective in terms of the White Sox playoff chances, White Sox wins and losses in playoff pursuits, you know, that kind of thing. However, since, let me grab the right split here. Let's just do from August to now, right? The beginning of August to today, September 21st. Benintendi has hit .273 with a .353 on-base percentage and a .547 slugging percentage. I know I threw a lot of numbers at you. That's the slash line. Maybe think of this one. A .900 OPS. A .900 OPS for Andrew Benintendi. In 2023, his OPS was .682. And that's where it is this year as well. He's got a .682 OPS this season. It was a .682 last year. However, when you look at the first half for Andrew Benintendi, he was on pace to be one of the worst, if not the worst, hitters in baseball. And now he's turned around to be one of the best, I believe it's 12 position players in the American League in the second half of the season. If Andrew Benintendi is a guy that can get to the 15 homer, 310, 320-ish on base percentage, and hit you something like .260, then you've got something that not only helps shape an offense as the White Sox look to score more runs than they have this year, but is also something that begins to be a bit attractive to other teams that are looking to push in and make playoff runs. Benintendi's, you know, not going to be, I wouldn't think, hopefully he can be, not going to be the level of deadline ad that he was from the Royals to the Yankees in 2022 when he was having a terrific season for Kansas City, hitting .320 and slugging .400 and getting on base at a .390 clip. That would be great, and everybody would sign up for that. But what this next season, this next, you know, the first few months of 2025 are going to be is kind of a twofold approach. It's going to be finding out whatever players the White Sox bring in, the Eric Fettys of the world, guys that you may want to flip. How are they performing? How are they achieving? You know, what can be tweaked here to get them to where they need to be, where the White Sox thought they could be when they brought them into the organization? And what existing players can brush off what happened here in 2024 and get back to being the guy that they know that they can be? Those are the big questions for this White Sox team over the next couple of months. And as we look at, you know, kind of those quotes from Jeff Passan's piece about the clubhouse itself, what is encouraging here, especially about the Grady Sizemore clubhouse, you know, since the move to change at manager and in the coaching staff, has been the connectedness, the resoluteness, I guess, of this White Sox clubhouse to at the very least understand that these losses are here and they hurt and they should. But the job's got to be done that next day, and they're going about their business the best way that they know how in terms of putting one foot in front of another and trying to get to their individual milestones. Darren Jackson talks about this a lot on the broadcast here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network, and he mentions that you got to be a little bit selfish in seasons like this, in the last couple of months. You got to kind of put, I mean, you want to still make the right play, right? You're not throwing over cutoff men and, you know, doing all those kinds of things. But you got to be a little bit selfish. You got to turn inward a little bit and make sure that your goals get met. Because on a team that has the win-loss record the White Sox does and won't be heading to the playoffs and is looking to rebuild, you are A, auditioning for 29 other teams, and B, the achievement of your own goals will help bring about the achievement of other goals for the team. That's just how it gets. You know, there are situations where that changes, right? Like in the 11th or the 12th or the 13th against the Angels the other night, you can't go up there thinking I'm going to smoke a two-run homer here with a runner on second base and get us a two-run lead. You got to execute the right way. You know, those kinds of things. You get back to playing that team brand of baseball, or you need to, in order to win a ball game in that situation. But for the most part, it can be grip it and rip it a little bit. You know, make sure that you're, you know, taking the right approach, finding the pitch for you to hit, all that kind of stuff, at least offensively, matters a ton. And hopefully it's what we see over the last couple of games here. Tonight against the Padres, three at home against the Angels, 3 on the road against Detroit, the last 2 in San Diego, and then 6 more before the end of the season. We're going to talk with White Sox beat reporter Scott Merkin here in a couple of minutes. Yoan Moncada is a bit of an awkward fit in the White Sox clubhouse, and he talked about it in pretty frank and forward terms. And so is his manager, Grady Sizemore. We'll get the long and short of it from Scott Merkin when we come back after a quick break here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Those are 380 yards rushing and 18 passing. That was like the old, even Rick Leach threw for more yards back then. But I want to credit Steve Stone, who sat with me in the dining area for the last 5 minutes and experienced my Michigan psychoses as they came back to win.
Oh, I'm glad for you, man.
If he's a little stunned in the broadcast side, it's probably because he couldn't imagine what he just witnessed me doing there. So.
Right. A little shell-shocked by how he watched a grown man act over the last hour and a half. I've been there, dude. I've been there. Wisconsin's played in a Final Four. So, I've broken down and nervous wreck myself, no doubt about it.
It's amazing. And I guess it's easy to talk about the topic where you called me about. It's easy to understand why Sox fans are so disgruntled and so angry, right? It means something to people. I mean, fandom means something. I mean, at the end of the day, it's sports. It's a great profession. We both love what we do. You and I, I'm talking about, I mean, everyone who's in the profession loves what they do. There's other things in life that are more pressing, but it means something. It means something to people. It's a connection, and it's a deep feeling for people who, I mean, I went to the school, but I mean, you know, you don't go to the school with the White Sox, but people who grew up, you know, they're parents grew up and their parents' parents grew up as Sox fans. So when you see 118 under the loss column, knowing that 119 and 120 are the two records, it's painful. And I think everyone in the organization gets that too. No one expects the Sox fans to say, oh, this is okay, we'll get it right. They expect them to be angry because of what's happened the last 2 years here and beyond that, actually.
No, that's right. I mean, we all get to work because White Sox fans care as much as they do. That's just the math of this. That's how this works. And you know, to that end, one of the things that seems to be, you know, coming to an end here for White Sox fans, for the franchise itself, is the time with Yoan Moncada. And you and other White Sox beat reporters had some time to talk with Moncada. And I'll be honest, Merk, when I clicked the headline, I didn't expect what I read. And there was it says, you know, just for folks who haven't read it yet, go and read it, MLB.com, and click the headline that says, Moncada candid about uncertain future with Sox. I guess, Mark, what hit you most with your conversation with Yoan?
Well, I think everything. And there's some stuff that I'll probably use in the newsletter Tuesday that I wasn't even able to get in the story last night. And I give, you know, Billy Russo did a – I just call him Billy credit. I give credit to Billy Russo, who did a great job interpreting this comment too. But I think the fact that, you know, Yoan was kind of honest, that he felt like he had a pretty good run. And if you look at it, you know, he had 3 pretty solid seasons for this team, 1 great season.
Yeah.
And then the injuries just crushed him, you know, and the injuries – and he, you know, even said, he said, I thought I had a good run. It could be better. And I think that's pretty honest. And I think the fact that he's, I don't know if confused is the word, but a little unsettled about what's going on now. You know, I guess, you know, I wasn't in Anaheim, but Grady explained it again to me yesterday. He talked about it a little bit when Yoan – you know, is coming back, that they want to get a look at Vargas and Ramos as much as they can. You know, that they even with those two, he's having trouble playing them both, you know, as much as they possibly can. And Moncada, let's be honest, he knows it. He said it to me yesterday. He talked about how, you know, he feels he still has good baseball left. This is a quote I didn't get to use, but he still has good baseball left, and he's got to wait until the free agent process starts to see what happens. So he has no illusions that the White Sox are picking up a $25 million option right next year. They'll use the $5 million buyout and they'll move on. And I think he's very emblematic of the visions of grandeur and the great excitement of the last rebuild and then kind of the huge disappointment leading to this rebuild, right? I mean, there were great moments for him and there just weren't enough. And that you could, I don't want to pin it on him. I like Yoan. I've liked dealing with Yoan. He's a very low key guy. He's the opposite of me in pretty much every way, along with being a really good athlete. So I think that sometimes gets misconstrued, but that's just his personality. You know, you can't make him be something he's not. That's what he is. So I get that it's coming to an end, and I think he gets it too. I think he's just confused about why he's here and not playing pretty much at all over these last, you know, 12 games if he was with the team.
Yeah, I think, you know, to be quite honest with you, it's whether it's the television broadcast, the radio broadcast, Moncada himself, you guys as reporters, I think it's a fair question to ask, right? And it's something that the White Sox franchise, you know, as a whether it's Chris Getz or Grady or what have you, they may or may not answer that question. It is going to be, you know, it's not as though there's a roster spot he's taking from somebody, right? We're not in a place where, you know, we're looking down at AAA.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but
go ahead.
It's no offense to Corey Jolks, who got sent down for him, obviously, or whatever, you know, sent to Charlotte. But you're right. It's not like he's blocking, you know, their top prospect from coming up by being on the roster. So it's just a weird conundrum, and I think he expressed it very well, and I think Grady expressed it well, too. But, you know, Johan really seems to be at a loss, or at least what he's telling me and what he's telling others about, you know, why he's not in the lineup.
Do you get the sense, I mean, I suppose this is kind of going back and you know, going to be hindsight 2020, right? But I assume that given the shape of the White Sox season to this point, there was a definite lean to getting Yoan Moncada as much playing time as he could. He was good in the first week and a half that he was able to play so that he could be moved to another team, continue his career, be healthy, play better, and the White Sox would get prospects back. I mean, that had to have been the plan for Moncada going into the year.
Yeah, I think that was that was a plan for a lot of these guys once things started at 3-22, right? Yeah. Then you start looking at what you can get back to kind of speed up the process. And I think there was even hope that he'd come back a little sooner than he did and maybe even interest some teams, you know, at the trade deadline if he was healthy at that point, which he was not. So, I mean, I you know, you see the replay of when he went down in Cleveland and he looked, you know, to be in serious amount of pain, excruciating pain. And he said, he did tell me yesterday he feels pretty good. He said he's not 100%, but he said it's pretty much the best he's felt since the injury and feels confident he's going to play. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of that. I mean, that's, yeah, you're exactly accurate that I think any of these veterans who were not going to be in the plans for next year or even the rest of the season were certainly trade potential, right, for Chris Getz at the deadline or even earlier.
What sense, if any, did Yoan give you about how the – you know, how the back and forth of the rehab assignment kind of went? Yeah, I know it started and then got halted and then started again and I believe was halted a second time, if memory serves. How did that work for him and what was he able to say about it?
I'll be honest, that's one topic I didn't hit with him. Now, the reporter who covered for me in Anaheim might have talked to him. I know the reporter and Lamont Pope from the Tribune both talked to Yoan on Monday when he first – well, he was there Sunday when they left – guaranteed rate, but they talked to him then. But yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what the level of agreement was between Yoan and the team on, you know, where he was and how he was progressing. But I guess the bottom line is everyone can have their opinion, but it's really the person who is rehabbing and the person who is hurt who's got to kind of lead the way, right? And tell you, well, no, I'm not at this point, or yes, I'm further along than I thought. And then you obviously have a ton of medical checkpoints to go through. It's not like someone just says, I'm good to go, and you're like, okay, we'll call you up tomorrow. You know, there's a lot of tests to go through. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a very kind of, like I said, kind of an emblematic way for this, you know, for kind of the last run, which looks so good on paper. And, you know, I saw Jeff Passan there last week from ESPN, does such a great job. And I remember him tweeting out something about all the guys they had under contract, or under contractual control, and how long they did. And everyone was like, man, this is going to be a dynasty. And, you know, you don't want to pile on. It wasn't. They only won two playoff games. But it certainly looked good as it got going, you know? And it just did not manifest. And now you're back on, I guess, the third rebuild I've covered since 2013, I think it is, with the White Sox.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the state of things. I wonder, you know, you had a chance to talk with Grady a little earlier. Has a decision been made as to whether or not Garrett Crochet is going to make that next and last start of the season? I know he's listed on the probables, but that's, you know, sometimes that's pro forma.
He was listed on the probables. When we talked to him last night, he seemed to be looking towards that start. That'll be the last home start of the year too, right? That'll be the Thursday day game against the Angels. Grady was kind of leaning towards that pregame yesterday. We didn't follow up again today, but non-committal. You know, he didn't say for sure, but I think it's, you know, and people have talked about this for everything that has not gone right this year, and we've gone over that many a times, both in person and, you know, with me as a guest on your show here. They've done just such a great job. I mean, Garrett's got to be one of the better stories in baseball this year, right? I mean, he really does, and I think it's probably a little under the radar because his innings have been limited in the second half, and the team is really bad. But, I mean, you look at him and a guy like Imanaga on the north side, I mean, you have two of the better pitching stories in the game. This is a guy who had not started since college, had 73 total innings in his career. Not like for one season, over three seasons. And literally in the first half, I was talking to, you know, Cease yesterday, and he said, you know, probably was the most dominant starter in the game in the first half. And as shown, he was great against the Padres last night for those four innings we watched him, you know. So, and I think the Sox deserve credit for the way they handle him, and I think they deserve credit for having Garrett have a big say in this too. Garrett did not want to be shut down. He wanted to make the starts. He wanted to pitch a full season as a starter. And even if that meant four innings, 56 pitches, which has been pretty consistent in that area, then he was okay with that. I mean, I'm sure he'd like to go, like last night, he was great. He would like to go six or seven, but he knew that wasn't the case. So kudos on both of them for being involved and making this not only work, but excel at that. I mean, who knows where he ends up, if he's still back here, but he's certainly a guy, you know, you could see at the top of any rotation, including the White Sox, and really, you know, kind of anchor not just in his pitching, but in his presence and the way he kind of helps other young pitchers in that clubhouse. And you've seen that, I'm sure, too, Connor.
Oh, no doubt about it. I think you make a great point. You can't trust Garrett Crochet at the beginning of the season when he says, I want to be a starter, and then put those resources behind him and not also trust him late in the season, I think.
Right.
Assuming that all those things check the same boxes. You know, it's an absolute – both sides deserve a lot of hat tip for that.
And I should quickly add, Garrett, at the end of last night when I asked him about, you know, 200 strikeouts, which he went over at 203, he's not a big individual guy, but he pointed to Matt Wise and Ethan Katz and Martin Maldonado and Corey Lee and Chucky Robinson. He said, and he even said, I started from zero this year. It's kind of – I mean, he's – you know, I did a story on him earlier in the year, kind of a takeout story, where he legitimately told me that when they told him, you're the opening day starter, he thought to himself, okay, cool, I made the rotation. He really didn't know until that point. So it's been that kind of great, kind of amazing progression for him in this role this year.
Back to the third base conversation just real quickly here, Mark, before we let you go. I know you got some work to do before the game starts tonight. With Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos both on the roster, leaving the Yoan Moncada aside here, How do you get a sense of where things are at the last couple of days of this season? Where are we going to go with the both of them? I mean, it is a crowded third base right now. It is the hot corner. It is not a large corner, and they've got to decide a little bit about Vargas and Ramos.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I mean, I think Ramos right now, and this is such a small sample size because I, you know, have not watched him at Charlotte or Birmingham, but I think he looks like the better defensive option. You know, Vargas had a really tough time offensively overall for the year, but especially since coming to the White Sox. But you kind of look at that and you think, well, you look at Corey Lee last year, right? He was 5-for-65 after he got traded over, worked his tail off in the offseason. And I think maybe fatigue is set in a little bit on him, but he's improved quite a bit. And I think if he improves the same level from last year to this year to next year, you're going to see a really good catching tandem there. So you hope the same thing can happen with Vargas now that he's kind of found a home and he's part of the plan. He's part, you know, Brady has said that a number of times, that Vargas and Ramos are both part of the plan, so they got to figure out where they're going to be. And I guess it all depends on also who's still here off the team they have and, yeah, you know, what positions are open when they after they make moves this offseason.
Merck, appreciate you as always. You're the best, and congratulations on a win from a bygone era of college football.
I'm buying everyone a drink at the Petco Park right now.
Sounds good, man. That's Scott. There's a all lot right, of people later, at Petco Connor. Park. This is their last homestand. You got That's a big check for you. Any room for me to hop on that tab?
Thanks, Scott. I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you. That's Scott Merkin of MLB.com. Really do go read the piece that he wrote. It's Moncada candid about uncertain future with White Sox. That's the headline, and it's a pretty apt description of what Yoan talked with about with White Sox beat reporters earlier in this week. We got to hit a break. We're a little late for that. I'm sure that Brendan and Sean, our producers, are screaming into the inoperative end of a microphone because we've got the hot one here. But we'll come right back with more White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Just a little bit left here before we get to the pregame show and then off to baseball. White Sox and Padres coming up at 7:40 tonight. Head to the ballpark on Thursday, September 26th for Sports Media Day presented by NBC Sports Chicago. Participate in a pregame Q&A session with sports media professionals when you purchase a specially priced ticket. I'll be there, so will Len. We'll look forward to it. To purchase tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/promos. That's WhiteSox.com/promos. We've gotten to a lot, rather, already in the show tonight. And, you know, my hope was to kind of go through the state of the White Sox in terms of the major league positions. And I guess with the with Scott Merkin hopping on and the Yoan Moncada conversation, you know, I'll kind of popping up about it. I don't know that we've left ourselves enough time to really go through the positions the way I wanted to. So maybe we'll save that for the final White Sox weekly of the regular season. And Lord knows we'll get into it much more specifically once the offseason begins. But, you know, two things kind of have perked up here or popped up here in the last couple of hours that are worth kind of revisiting. We talked about it a bit here at the opening of the show, and that's one, it seems entirely likely that Garrett Crochet is going to make that last start at home against the Angels on Thursday afternoon. Sports Media Day is also that day or at the ballpark, so if you need one more extra reason to head out there, hang out, and have a good time, there's one for you. But it will also, it seems, be Garrett Crochet's last start of the season. I am somewhat, I guess, surprised, although the context that Scott Merkin offered us here in the last segment kind of, you know, makes me less surprised, I suppose. The goal, it sounds like, for Crochet hasn't necessarily been 200 strikeouts or an innings count or whatever. It's been make it the whole way. If you're healthy, pitch. And he's been healthy, so he's going to pitch. And I suppose that's probably easily read. It just, it's so, so different than what we see in big league baseball nowadays. And I don't mean from the, you know, the competitive desire thing. I'm not taking shots at anybody who's, you know, on the injured list or anything like that. Far from it. If you're healthy, you pitch. It's just not everybody gets to be healthy for an entire season. And I think, you know, you kind of have to look at the workload restrictions that the White Sox have placed on Crochet. And it's, you know, it's an impossible thing to know, right? It's proven a negative. It's difficult. No one's ever going to know whether or not the innings restrictions kept Garrett Crochet healthy. But you can't prove that they didn't either. And, you know, whether this is going to be a blueprint that's repeatable in any real sense, whether it informs the White Sox development program on how they can replicate a process like that, there's wins all over the place, potential wins all over the place for having gotten Garrett Crochet to where he got to this season. Whether he makes that last start against the Angels at home or not, it's been a really impressive run. It truly has. You know, the other part of this, you know, the thing that's kind of come up here over the last couple hours or so has been the awkwardness of Yoan Moncada being on the roster. Feels good to name that, right? I mean, it can be named in that way. And there are other situations across the league that are either similarly awkward or even more so as you get to the end of a season for any of these teams that are not headed toward the playoffs. I get to one story that our colleague at ESPN, Jesse Rogers, reported earlier, you know, as we go around baseball here at the tail end of the show and kind of talk about some league-wide things. But it is certainly a strange fit to have Yoan Moncada on that roster and not a piece that Grady Sizemore is interested in getting starts to. Or I guess a better way to put it, a fairer way to put it, is that both Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos draw a lot more interest in terms of where those starts are going to go, and that makes sense in terms of where the White Sox are looking for the future. As for some of those stories, you know, we're going to save the back half of the show, the last couple of minutes here, to talk about Shohei Ohtani and an incredible article that Sarah Langs, one of our favorites here on White Sox Weekly, wrote up about the night that was for Shohei Ohtani the other night, the 6-for-6 with 10 RBI and 3 home runs and 2 stolen bases and, right? But this story, I mean, listen, this is a wild one, and it makes me, I'm sure that former ball players, guys like Darren Jackson, who you'll hear on the broadcast, have other stories to share like this that either didn't come out back in the day or did come out and we've kind of lionized them from here. But this story broke, this afternoon. Yeah, this afternoon. Jeff Passan and Jesse Rogers of ESPN both contributed to it. I don't know if you saw this, but the Washington Nationals demoted their all-star shortstop C.J. Abrams to the minor leagues. He pulled an all-nighter at a Chicago-area casino, leaving only hours before a Friday day game against the Chicago Cubs, sources told ESPN's Jesse Rogers. You scroll through and skip a bit, brother, and at the end, you find the quote from Nationals manager Dave Martinez, and he said, "I just want it to be known that the demotion was not performance-based. It's an internal issue. I'm not going to give specifics. The reporting kind of goes into it and talks a little bit about it. I'm not saying that one team or the other, the White Sox, avoided a situation like this, and therefore they held a clubhouse together. Far from it, but I know, you know, it's probably be looked at that from a certain standpoint. But like, this is a wild story as we come to the end of a baseball season. This is a crazy thing to have happen. It's a 23-year-old dude, an all-star in Major League Baseball, who's set to make all kinds of money. And listen, these kinds of things happen. I hope I'm not judged on the decisions that I made as a 23-year-old. However, this is, you know, kind of talking about Garrett Crochet wanting to take the ball on the last day he can in the regular. You've got to finish this thing, right? And that's what makes baseball so hard and so different than other sports, is that it's every day. It's every day for 5.5, 6 months. And tomorrow's ball game is coming for you, whether you're ready or not. And it's the staying ready that is one of the more underreported and more difficult things in baseball to do. We, as baseball fans, kind of take for granted that when a guy digs in the bottom of the first and takes his first cuts, that he's just as ready as he was opening day. That's not the case up and down baseball throughout every roster in the league. It's not the case. And it is so incredibly difficult and testing of a baseball player's, you know, character, of their work ethic, of their mental toughness, all of those things, to stand in that box and be ready on a 162-game basis. And I know that that's going to be met with some eye rolls, right? Like, oh, our guys used to do it back in the day, or, you know, I do that every day, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But these are the difficulties that those players face. You know, that same thing, there's an analogy to be made, and the same kind of deal that you go, you got to be there. You've got to be there. And in the case of C.J. Abrams and the Nationals, he will not be for the last couple of days of the regular season, because he failed to show up ready to report on that ball game against the Cubs Friday. So that is it's a pretty wild story that I thought was, you know, worth talking about here as we get toward the end of the season. You got to finish. You got to finish, and you got to be there for your teammates. That is absolutely an imperative in Major League Baseball, and it kind of helps inform the decision that, you know, the White Sox and Garrett Crochet seem to be making about making his last start. At least that's how it feels to me. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next year. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. We'll wrap up White Sox Weekly when we come back. Get you all set for the pregame show starting at 7. First pitch for the White Sox and Padres at 7:40 right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. A couple of minutes left before we hit our last break and get on over to the pregame show for the White Sox and Padres coming up. We'll start that at 7 o'clock, 7:40 first pitch. Len and DJ have your evening's entertainment starting at 7:30. Sox looking to get one in this series against the Padres. Set themselves up for a potential series win tomorrow afternoon. And really just, you know, kind of get as many dubs as you can before the end of the season. 8 to play here. 3 more at home against the Angels on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday against the Tigers on the road. I think everybody who's a baseball fan has had either woken up to or got woken up by the Dodgers and Marlins the other night. Shohei Ohtani has had an incredible season. And I didn't want to let the opportunity pass by here in the last couple of minutes of the show to point this out from two different standpoints. One, Ohtani season needs to be talked about quite a bit, and I think we will for years to come. And on the other side, one of my absolute favorite baseball researchers, Sarah Langs of MLB.com, wrote up this little piece, and it is so good and so filled with fun facts about Ohtani's night that I can basically just read it off to you a little bit, and I will, because if you didn't know just exactly what baseball's best player, that's right, I said it, probably, baseball's best player did the other night, here's what happened. He was 6-for-6 with 2 doubles and 3 homers 2 nights ago against the Marlins. He had 10 RBI, 2 stolen bases, and 17 total bases. Langs writes, it's the first three-homer game in MLB history where the player also had multiple stolen bases. Ohtani was also the first player since at least 1901 with at least five hits, multiple homers, and multiple stolen bases. And then he hit a third home run. Ohtani is also the first player with at least five extra base hits and multiple stolen bases in a game since at least 1901. He reached 50-50 in the game, 50 homers and 50 steals. Only one MLB player has had any games in a career with at least 10 RBI, 6 hits, 5 extra base hits, 3 home runs, and 2 stolen bases. Ohtani is the only player to do it since we started counting RBI in 1920. He had 17 total bases on the day, tied for fourth most in a game since 1901. It's the seventh time a batter has had at least 17 total bases, which blew my mind, right? Like, I had no... If you'd have told me how many times has a batter had 17 total bases in a game, I'd have said, like, three. Apparently, it's 17. Before Ohtani, the most total bases by a player in a game who also had multiple stolen bases was 11. That was Kirk Gibson. And no, not young Kirk Gibson. 1995. Kirk Gibson, which is crazy. He also set the Dodgers' single-season home run record. He passed Sean Green, who had 49 in 2001. Ohtani has the leading total in Dodgers history and still has 8 games to play. It's his fourth game this season with at least one home run and multiple stolen bases. That ties Eric Davis in 1987 for the second most in a season, behind only Ricky Henderson's 5 such games in 1986. It is absolutely crazy what he's been able to accomplish. And I think he's going to go ahead and win the NL MVP. Francisco Lindor is going to miss the rest of the series for the Mets and hoping to return on Tuesday. He's dealing with a couple of different issues, I think. But hopefully Lindor is able to come back. He was hit by a pitch and was able to play catch a little bit with what was dealing with Lindor. Sorry, lower back injury for Lindor is what it is. Mixed up my players and hit by pitches. Anyway, Ohtani's going to win it, and the fact that he's going to win an MVP while the DH, while we all know that he's probably going to pitch next year or maybe even in the playoffs, it's incredible stuff. White Sox and Padres coming up a little bit. Big thanks to Brendan Riley and Sean Graney, our producers. Pre-game show in just 4 minutes. Sox and Padres coming up on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.